Welcome to Reconstructed Faith, a podcast where we talk about truth you can build your life on. We hope to dive into the hard conversations of life and faith and seek out reasonable, substantive answers. My name is Colson Lechner, and I am joined by Chris Legg and Brent Starnes. This is Reconstructed Faith.
Well, welcome back to the Reconstructed Faith podcast. My name is Colson Lechner, joined by my partner in crime, Chris Legg. And Chris, I'm going to throw it over to you because today we've got a really cool special guest joining us.
Oh, yeah. This is really cool. And unfortunately, Bryn cannot be with us today. Probably baby and pregnancy and all the things, issues that she's... So our normal co-host is out today, Greg. So anyway, let me introduce Greg Kokel, and we will put all the details of his bio and stuff, but we wanted to go ahead and jump in. I will just let you know that Greg has been doing this kind of stuff for a while. He's the president and founder of Stand to Reason, which is an apologetics ministry. I don't want to undersell it. He's written lots of books, and we will put all that details so you guys can look him up and chase him down and stalk him for the rest of his life once you hear what he's got to say about all this stuff. But Greg, just to let you know, we mentioned it before, but just the heads up, we started this podcast because we saw this movement happening of deconstruction.
Right.
And a lot of Christians were responding to it. It felt to us several years ago when we started this in a less than awesome way. Like they were either super condemning and attacking or super dismissive or whatever. And the thought was, you know, the image we've used from the beginning was, you know, the old TV show where they say, you know, move that bus when they've spent a week tearing down a house and rebuilding something. And if the bus had moved and all that was left was a pile of rubble, you'd think, man, someone didn't finish their job. And yet we're watching people do this so constantly, consistently around our nation. And so we thought, well, let's start adding our voice to what we can to help people reconstruct, because our theory is that deconstructing and reconstructing your faith is kind of an ongoing thing that we call learning in some ways. And so this movement, but you're specifically trained, and more importantly, you train thousands of other people on how to have these conversations, how to have these. We've got parents and grandparents who are pulling their hair out trying to talk to the next generations about some of these issues. So talk a little bit about where you're coming from with this, what got you on this track, and then let's start giving people the tools.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad you introduced me as cool, Chris, because my daughters would not use that word to describe me. All right, but I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and so cool had that was substantive back then. So I'm just going to take that. All right, I'm still cool at 75. All right, that just made my day. Okay, this deconstruction thing is a real problem, and it's not just a problem in the sense that it's influencing a lot of people's convictions, young people especially. They're moving away. But there is there's a whole dynamic to this. And I'll tell you, I'm not the specialist in this. I'm going to give you anecdotal information from my exposure to lots of churches and a lot of people in communicating. My colleague at Stand to Reason, Tim Barnett, and my dear friend, Elisa Childers, have written a very important book on this called The Deconstruction of Christianity. And I highly suggest, I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but there's a few books out there right now. Sean McDowell's written one. Jason Jimenez has written one, and they're good. Sean takes a little different direction on these things, but the question about deconstruction, I'm just going to say, make a general point here. And that is, deconstruction can mean two different things.
Right.
It could mean reassessing from a foundation of truth in which you're trying to refine your understanding of what is true. And that means you have questions, you're concerned, maybe you have doubts or whatever. You're trying to go back to the text. You are reconstructing. You're deconstructing, meaning you're questioning on this point of view. You're questioning, and then you're trying to figure out what is the biblical truth, and how can I realign maybe errant beliefs along with the scriptures. That's what I think that's the way Sean McDowell will characterize deconstruction. Now, Elisa and Tim do a different, take a different approach. They think that a deconstruction is not a how would they put it? Maybe a neutral approach.
Right.
Deconstruction, what we've seen happening is when people deconstructing, they are not going back to the Bible, and right. they're trying to reform reformandus or whatever that was that Luther and some of the others during the Reformation did. They are actually there are things they don't understand, and they're listening to people who are leveraging those things they don't understand into a reasons why they should leave Christianity. You know, it's right. kind of interesting. I almost said, because the way I talk about these things, I almost said the reasons why Christianity isn't true, because I think that's the relevant question for anything here. What is true? What is the nature of reality? All yeah. right. And partly to push back against an impulse from our culture that when you talk about religion, this comes all the way from the Enlightenment, so it's been around for a couple hundred years, but still, especially nowadays, that when you're talking about religion, you're just talking about your preferences, what you right. like. You're not talking about the way the world actually is. You know, right. you're not, when they'll say, well, Christianity is true, they mean true for them. They don't mean true to reality. They don't mean true right. the way gravity is true. I mean, let's face
That's
it.
So if you quit, this was our very first episode, I feel like. Our first three or four episodes 5 years ago was, what is truth? Is there truth? Like, that was the...
Sure.
Because you've got to start the conversation there, or what's the point of having a conversation
yeah, yeah.
at all, right?
Well, most people can't get away from the idea that there's truth, because if they say there right. is no truth, they're speaking a truth, obviously.
yeah,
so
exactly.
It's self-refuting, and if we couldn't figure out what's true about the world in some foundational ways, we'd be dead in a day, right?
Right.
But when it comes to religion and ethics, there's a whole different category to them, and I was mentioning gravity. You know, if you don't believe in gravity, you're not going to float away. You know, because
right.
it's a feature of the world, right? It's not affected by your beliefs. And this is the way that I encourage people to think about any religion, because all religions are actually meant at their core to tell you what reality is like in an additional dimension than what science will tell you, you know. And but that's largely abandoned. And so people are initially, in a certain sense, infected young people by this idea that, all right, well, what do I like and what don't I like? And so if they're asking that, the question about religion that way, especially their Christianity, and so
right.
since we're talking about deconstruction, we're not talking about an outsider or a skeptic, but somebody raised in the church or with belief in some fashion of Christianity, and now they're doubting it. And what they're asking is, well, I don't like that. I don't like that teaching. I don't like that teaching.
Right.
I don't like this teaching. I don't like this other thing. And you know, pretty soon they're thinking, well, I don't like that. So why should I do it? And then other people are beckoning them, and you guys know this. There is an entire industry that is serving, sometimes with financial impulse and motives, the needs, as it were, of deconstructing young people who are who are saying, this is dumb, I'm moving away. And so this is deconstruction, the way Elisa and Tim would put it, in a negative sense,
yeah,
where Sean sees it as, and this is a difference of opinion about how to use the word, but I'm
right.
with Tim and Elisa. I think if somebody's deconstructing, they're not trying to rebuild Christianity according to the truth. They're trying right. to find reasons to walk away because they don't like it, you know? So that's one thing to keep in mind. Colson, were you going to jump in there? I was just
I was going to say this. What struck us was how many of the people who were, quote, deconstructing, They like you said, they came to a place of going, a famous Rhett and Link from Good Mythical Morning, who were Campus Crusade guys who started a very famous YouTube channel, and it
yeah.
was very family-friendly Christian.
Yes, I remember those guys. I didn't watch it, but
and
I remember they were fundamental
in this
movement.
And one of them came out, they came out with their deconstruction stories, and the answer that one of them said was, I just realized I don't have to believe this, and I don't want to anymore, so I'm not going to. And
yeah.
there was no truth claim one way or another, or students who we've interviewed who have said, well, I just know there's so many problems with the Bible. And you're like, great, okay, like what? And they're like, well, there's just so many. And pick one, and we'll start there. We'll have that conversation. Well, there's just a lot. That's what my professor said. And there's just no effort at all to, hey, I've just leveled this thing. I feel no responsibility, obligation. And I think it's like you said, there's something they don't like. So they're just not motivated to ask one way or another. Even the conversation we've had about marriage and, you know, their parents' marriage isn't very inspiring. And so they're not very inspired by the faith partially because of that. They watch their parents' lives. And then the first chance they get to just deconstruct, like they're motivated to find something, some thread to pull, that if there's just enough of a hole, then they're done.
That's right.
And there's just no effort at all.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. You brought up something a moment ago that was really important, Chris, that I want to get to in a moment. And this is, again, this is anecdotal. I'm making observation of a full range of things, and it's Elisa and Tim's work is, to speak of one, I'm most familiar with there. Jason Jimenez has done a great job, too. I don't know what the hijacking Christ or something like that. But so most of my reference of depth is going to be to the work that Elisa and Tim did in Deconstructed Christianity. But I have noticed maybe three themes. Given the backdrop of relativism, okay, that's kind of a given. You do you, you know, this is the battle cry of the age for young people.
Your truth and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is your truth kind of deal, all that relativistic speaking. So what that does is it gives them freedom. It gives them a kind of a psychological freedom to depart, just like you mentioned those guys said, well, I don't have to believe this. I'm not exactly sure what they meant by that, and I'd probe them a little further. But the point is there is this psychological freedom from their culture, not just to question, because I think that's fine, but to take what they want and like and discard what they don't like. Okay, so I think I see three things here that are significant influences to get people to start moving away from Christianity. And one of them is, you just referenced it, Chris, and the way I put it here, a note I put down before we started was there's no genuine spiritual life in their home.
Right.
So now keep in mind that these are kids that we're talking about that are deconstructing. That means they're Christian in some sense. They're home. They grow up this way, and now they're leaving. They're assessing and leaving. Actually, they're assessing in order to leave.
Yeah, you know, they're leaving and then start assessing. Yeah, it's a little bit of all of it mixed in. Yeah.
So they already have a negative mindset, but why? And this is one of them. There's no real spiritual life in their home. Now, my situation is not like what we're experiencing mostly now in deconstruction, but I was raised Roman Catholic and in the 50s and early 60s. And so five kids in our family. And then, but there was no spiritual life at all to that. And even though we were doing the obligatory things, going to church on Sundays and holy days of obligation and all the things that were part of the rote behavior of being Roman Catholic, when we got to a point of thinking for ourselves, everybody left. And I know specifically me when I was 18, I was asked, do you think this is really true? And I thought, no, I don't. What am I doing messing around with this? And I got better ways to use my Sunday. And so off I went. But notice there was no spiritual life in the home and certainly nothing in my parents that was really rich. And who is the guy, Christian Smith, who wrote that thing back in the mid-2000s about, you know, the spiritual life of Christian young people and how empty it was, and it was a theistic, deistic, how do they characterize the fate? He did another study. It was a great study. I'm slow in downloading some of these terminologies, but
The moralistic therapeutic deism? Yes.
What is that phrase?
The moralistic therapeutic deism.
There it is. Thank you for helping me out, Chris. You got to travel with me, so you know when I forget my things. This is the guy, Christian Smith, who did this. There was another gal, Melinda, somebody who worked with him. But anyway, that was a piece giving us great insight in what was going on in the church that I think set us up for a big wave of of deconstruction because yes. there wasn't as much substance there. That's another issue I'll get to in a moment. But on this issue of spiritual life in the home, about 5 years ago, he's at University of Notre Dame, and he did another study, and he said there's one thing that will almost guarantee that your children will follow Christ if you're a Christian parent, and that you live authentic Christian lives. He says yes. it's almost deterministic, like 85%. Yeah. When you have a household that is richly committed to this. So I think that's one reason. You have parents, this is what you mentioned a few moments ago, Chris, you have parents that are living authentically as Christians.
Right.
This is the way they live their life, you know. And I'm not saying they go to church every single Sunday. We don't do that. That they have devotions in the home every whatever. But it is clear that for me and my house, we shall serve the Lord kind of mentality, however that looks. And there's a mixture between families of how that plays out, but there's a deep sense of devotion. So this is one thing right here. If that is not in the family, if you have families that have mom and dad or say, yeah, we're Christian, let's go to church, blah, blah. And then they're really doing inappropriate things in their lives. There's not virtue in their lives. You know, they're stealing the salt and pepper shaker from the restaurant or something like that, you know, crazy things. Or I don't know if you saw that.
Just being
that
unkind.
Movie. Yeah. Part, huh?
Oh, I was just, you were referencing a movie. What? The stealing
Oh, shoot. Here we go. My download speed is really slow lately. I'm kind of at dial-up speed right now. But,
a little AOL.
The criminal guys went to... The criminal guys went to the house and the kids were left alone. Is that Left Alone or Alone at Christmas? What was the name of that song?
Home Alone or whatever.
Home Alone, thank you. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Well, the people are going and flying away and the dad's stealing all the stuff in the airplane. Yeah. And so the point is that if you have that of adults that are not working to live virtuously, and nobody's perfect, obviously, but are compromising in all these different ways, kids see that and they don't take it seriously. So that I would say is...
Consider, which again, so you don't know me, but this is actually one of my areas. In addition to being the pastor here, I'm also a marriage and family therapist. I own and operate counseling center.
Do you also steal the utensils too? Are you trying to tell us here, Chris?
No comment.
Not overtly.
When I teach on this, I think we should expect that. We should predict that based on what Paul taught, that Christ, the parable, the living parable of Christ in the church lived out by husband and wife.
Yeah.
So if you see a husband, you know, who sacrifices well for his wife, the children see that and go, well, why? What is, you know, that, gosh, this, there must be something behind that. When the wife is devoted to her husband, that's a beautiful thing. And those are parables. So the parable would work in reverse. When the husband is not kind, sacrificial for his wife, his children know this whole Jesus thing is kind of a joke.
Yeah.
If it doesn't even motivate him to be nice to his wife or for her to be nice to her husband, kind, gentle, sacrificial, all those things, well, then of course the children are disillusioned by any other claims they make because the claims they make don't change anything in them. And so...
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the point here. So this first point is, I think, what drives people who are kind of weaned on relativism to say this ain't for me is because lack of good example in the home like that. The second thing is an emotional wound. An emotional wound. So there, I honest to goodness, last week on my own show, I had an atheist call in, and it was really great talking to him because he wasn't combative. He just had questions about things, and so I said, well, I have some questions of you too. I'm just curious, and that's my approach to dealing with things. I ask a lot of questions. I wrote a book about it. You might be familiar with it, called Tactics.
I was going to ask you about that in a minute.
Yeah. Okay. It's on sale at Amazon right now for Christmas, just saying.
That's right. We'll put the link. There you go.
Okay, that's good. Tactics. But I wanted to know why he said he deconstructed. And I said, what happened? And what he explained to me was an emotional wound. He said there were a lot of hypocrites in the church.
Yes.
And he said one other thing, but it was kind of in the same category. And my thinking is, of course, they're hypocrites of the church. They're worse than that, for goodness sake, you know. This right. is what we're trying to get together and get squared away. You've got to expect right. to have nasty people that are on a journey kind of thing.
Right.
And then there are genuine fakers. I mean, that's what a hypocrite is. I get that. But notice that it was not an objection about the substance of Christianity.
So
it was an emotional wound. Okay, and I have mm-hmm. other people that are very close to me that have walked away from Christ, from what appeared to be a solid spiritual commitment, and then it turns out an emotional wound. It isn't like, well, let's talk about the, you know, the evidence for the resurrection or the, you know, the cosmological argument for the existence of God.
Right.
It's not on the radar for them, emotional wound. And then the emotional wound has to be healed in some fashion in order to get them interested. So that's the second thing, the treatment that they've received from Christians. And that's the way it was with this guy. He was a bright guy, from what I could tell, and he was a nice guy. And we had a really, really good conversation. He was not combative at all. He came up with some kind of goofy things about from his atheism. I think you defined atheism wrong. What? Atheism is just somebody who lacks a belief in God. Well, that's a new development.
That you probably heard that kind of stuff. Yes.
But he ended up, as I pressed him on a few questions gently, of abandoning mm-hmm. it because there's a way to approach that. And I write about that in a different book that will help uncover what's going on, and a fair-minded person will respond. However, and he's on a journey, maybe. Maybe he'll call back. We'll have more calls, conversations. But it was an emotional wound, you know, the hypocrisy right. in the church. And there was something else he mentioned in that general category. Okay, so that's the second thing. No spiritual life in their home, no genuine spiritual life, no consistent spiritual life, and the emotional wounds. And by the way, sometimes those go together because the parents wound the child when they're supposed to be good Christians. Okay, here's the third thing, and I've noticed this quite a bit, and that is that those, when you ask what they're leaving and why they're leaving, you find out, and you hinted at this, Chris, that they don't, it's not clear on exactly what their precise objection is. You could say, well, there's problems with the Bible. Okay, I get it.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of loose ends. Listen, if anybody looked at my Bible and then opened up the Gospels, you're going to see in pencil question marks in the margin of every single page, you know,
absolutely.
Because it like, what's up with this? You know, Jesus, I wish you were here to tell me about what are you talking about?
Yes.
And I've been at this 52 years, you know, so there's a lot of loose ends. I get that. And there are loose ends that are particularly troubling to people, like the slavery or the so-called, I want to call it the so-called slavery because
that's right.
Translation is, I think, the more recent translations are unfortunate. Do you know if you go in the King James translation, almost the word translated now, slavery, is almost universally translated servant.
Right. Yeah.
And because the word slavery has a different connotation nowadays after
absolutely.
The American system, and that's what people think. Anyway, so that's a problem, and the so-called
I'm
genocide.
I'm looking at Colson because we have a whole one whole season is the Bible immoral by today's standards, and we covered slavery. It took like 3 hours to cover. In fact, you'll appreciate I used a prepper analogy of if the grid went down and everything fell apart. And my neighbor who was starving sent his children over to work for me to be my, like, not paid.
Your
I'm
slaves.
Just going to feed them and protect them. And that's it. That's all I'm offering them is a place to stay and food to eat. It would be unloving for me to say no. But the problem is if I say yes, that's the biblical picture of servanthood.
In most of the cases, right. And this is where, what, a man sold his daughter into slavery? Come on. Yeah, he got her a job, man. Relax.
Right, yeah. Yes, that's
so,
right.
Anyway,
sorry, I cut you off there.
But the problem with those, Chris, excuse me, is that it requires somebody, because we're talking about a culture thousands of years ago, that's very different from ours. And so consequently, you have practices that are really meant to protect that seem barbaric on a surface reading. And so it requires a little charity by the objector to listen through and try to understand the circumstances in which these things happen and be sympathetic to maybe some inappropriate translations in more modern scriptures, Bibles, on this particular word, avad, which is the word translated either servant or slave. It's interesting, the same word is used in regarding Moses, and Moses was a servant of God, but he owned slaves.
Right.
It was the same word.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So anyway, but just the point there that there is there are answers to these questions, and if somebody is even a moderately charitable approach to these things, they can see, well, yeah, there's more to this than meets the eye. All right,
for sure.
And even on the issue of pardon me, so-called genocide, I've thought about this. And actually, the last book I wrote was meant to deal with a lot of these questions. Excuse me. And I didn't include this illustration because I thought of it after the book went to press. But when somebody says there's a genocide in the Bible, blah, 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 I said, what is genocide? Oh, well, it's, you know, it's when one group, you know, kills a whole bunch of other people, you know. All right, good. All right. So you mean like what the Germans did to the Jews? Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, was it genocide when the Allied armies killed a whole bunch of the Germans? Because they killed more Germans than the Germans killed Jews.
Right.
Well, that's not genocide. Well, why not? Well, because they were trying to stop the people who were doing the genocide.
Right.
Right. So then genocide is not just killing a bunch of people. It's killing a bunch of people for the wrong reason.
Right, unjustly,
okay.
That's right.
Now you lay that out, now you ask the question, could God have had a good reason to kill all those Canaanites? And now you've laid a foundation for an understanding of these people were nasty people. They were burning their babies left and right. They were doing all kinds of grotesque stuff, you know, and enough of this, you know, and he waited a long time to judge them, and then... Anyway, so I'm getting off into another issue, but one thought I did have, though, was if Richard Dawkins had been present when the Canaanites were taking hundreds and sometimes thousands of their children and burning them in the mold in the red hot arms of one of their gods.
Moloch and Baal, yeah.
Yeah, right. He would say, how could there be a God that would allow this kind of thing to happen? And then when God acts in judgment on it, then... People say, how can there be a God who would allow his people to do the, you know, it's like you can't win. But notice how understanding of the circumstances changes a lot. And so this is, I think, no clear understanding. This is a third area. There's a lot of things they just don't understand. I remember, my daughter had to remind me of the name of this quarterback. He used to play for Green Bay Packers, and they went to the Colts. Now he's with somebody else. He's a well-known. Why am I asking you guys? You guys aren't fans.
Yeah, is it Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers. Thank you. Oh, good.
Is that the right one? You got it. Well done.
Five stars for Coulson.
Thank you.
So he had an interview with the gal, and I do have this in a book, the gal that was the race car driver, used to be his friend, his girlfriend, and now. So she was doing a podcast, and he's a disaffected Christian. And then he's saying, one of the things he said is, I can't believe in a God who would send people to hell just because they didn't believe in him. Well, that's not the Christian message.
Right, exactly.
God's not sending people to hell because they don't believe in him.
Right.
He's punishing people for doing wrong things. That's Revelation 20. The books are open, and there's all you're bad, man. There's your rap sheet. You're done. And at the heart of this was a complete misunderstanding of the core of Christianity that he walked away from. He was walking away from a falsehood, which that's a good idea to walk away from a falsehood.
That's healthy deconstruction. Yeah, that's the healthy version.
That's the healthy, and let's get corrected, you know. But and so I think this is also the case, fellas, the lack of a clear understanding of the Christian worldview. And it's a huge part of what Stand to Reason is devoted to, is trying to restore a balanced understanding, a proper understanding, a biblical understanding of a Christian worldview. And look, if people get it right and they say it's not for me, okay, no complaint. Too bad. I mean, I'm sad about that, but okay, I get it. But if what they're doing is they're walking away from a distortion And there's lots and lots of distortions, even within Christian ranks.
Yes.
Then they're going to be, then that's just too bad. That compounds the difficulty because they're walking away for the wrong reasons.
Right, and we actually, a common common phrase we have used with, we often have people on who are deconstructionists or atheists in their views or whatever. We try to target ones
sure.
who are at least aware of the faith and have walked away from it. Is it so often they'll explain what it is and we're like, yeah, I'm an atheist when it comes to that God too. Like the God you just described, I don't believe he exists either. Like that's an amazing perversion
right.
of the God introduced to us through scripture. Like that's, you're not really very close. Or like you said, the version of Christianity that you're describing is really not, it's not something that we believe either. Like, I don't know
right.
what religion you were raised mm-hmm. with, but it wasn't Christianity. It was
yeah.
something masquerading as Christianity,
so,
maybe.
Chris, sometimes though, they are walking away from, at least at some aspect, an accurate understanding. I can't believe in a God who would send people to hell forever, for example. Well,
sure,
well,
right.
I think that's an accurate view of scripture, but they are,
right.
but they have such a narrow slice of the character of God that they're responding to, that they don't see the full picture, you know, that God initiates a rescue plan to suffer immensely as a human in order to rescue people from the justice of God. And
right.
Everybody loves justice unless it's exercised towards them.
Right. Right, exactly.
You know, and so we can trade a little bit on this universal sense of the propriety of justice. And to point out, look at God's just, well, how could a good God send people to hell? Well, isn't he loving? Yeah, he's loving. Why is he loving? Because he's good.
Right.
Why is he sending them to hell? Because he's good.
Right.
It's all rooted in his goodness, you know?
Exactly.
Anyway, so those are the three things that, in my experience, I think are functional and people moving away and starting to look elsewhere for something that's more appealing. And I think the question, if for a single question, this is good for, I'm sure you guys have asked this questions when you've had people on board, or parents can ask their kids in a gentle way. I had this happen in my own family. So I'm speaking from experience. I didn't always handle it the best way, but you got to be gentle and just curious and don't punish in one way or another your children for asking the questions and wondering what
is
true.
Absolutely not. Oh, my gosh.
This
is one of our main themes, Greg, is this. Yeah. Every single person who has deconstructed their faith and returned or have ended up building their faith, it was because they knew they were allowed to ask questions, doubt, mm-hmm. push, and their parents, grandparents, and churches welcomed that. Like, yeah, bring
yeah.
it on. You know, we're fine
yeah.
The ones who deconstructed and have stayed away are the
yeah.
ones who were not allowed to do that. That they were.
Well, why would they come back?
Absolutely.
You know,
why would
under those circumstances?
That's right. Pay no attention to the
yeah.
man behind the curtain is not a good apologetic. It's a
yeah.
man. That's such a great point. You're dead
yeah.
on. That's really
Thanks,
good. I'm
Chris.
Glad you're seeing that.
So,
yeah,
so
keep
here's
going.
Here's the question I would ask, very simple. If somebody, I would say, what happened? I mean, just what happened? And then let them talk. I have talked to a number of parents who have come to me at events, and they say, my son, my daughter, raised in the Lord. Now they're gone. I said, did you ever ask them why they left?
Right.
What happened is the question. And then at least you're going to get some substance. And it may be just very general. Well, the Bible has problems, like you mentioned.
Right.
Or
right.
it just, you know, just didn't seem right to me or didn't fit my personality or those kinds of things. Actually, there you've got two different kinds of questions. One goes to the merits. The Bible has problems, even though it's obscure at that point. The other one has to do with a subjective, I didn't like it. You know, and that's two different kinds of things. So when I'm asked in interviews and even in more secular environments, I was on an interview 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago now. It was actually in September, and it aired in early September, then it aired in September. So what is that, 3 months? And it was the diary of a CEO, and I had Alex O'Connor sitting across the table from me for five hours and 8 grams of that was a grueling experience. But my case in all of those situations is not that Christianity is fun or that it's likable, because it's not always fun. It's not always likable. It's that it's true, whether we like it or not. It's still true. That doesn't change. Right. So there are good reasons to believe it's true, and there are good reasons, in a certain sense, to like it from a certain perspective. But if all you're thinking is narcissistically, you know, right, what I want to do and what makes me feel good in the moment, well, don't take Christianity. Find whatever, but not that. Go to Eastern religion. Then you can be spiritual and not religious, and high in individual freedom, low on spiritual responsibility. And if you die, you get another million shots at it, you know, reincarnation. But right, that doesn't mean
but
it's
don't
true.
Make any claims on logic or reason if you're going to do that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, what gets me about the reincarnation thing is I was in India quite a few years ago, and there was a big poster, a big thing about a guy who was a guru there, a Hindu guy, who claimed to be the reincarnation of Jesus, right? Now, a lot of these people who do this, they make that claim. Well, I'm reincarnation of Jesus, all right? Now, yeah, you can't have everybody who is alive at the same time that are reincarnations of Jesus. That's the one
right,
problem,
exactly.
Obviously. Somebody's right. mistaken, but I don't think it does their system well. You know, think about it, because the better you are, the more of a chance you're finally going to get out of the reincarnation system and get into nirvana, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Now, Jesus was pretty cool 2,000 years ago, right? Yeah.
Apparently he's still in the
system.
Yeah.
Man, if I'm never going to be as good as Jesus, and if I was,
right,
I could still be around for... So that doesn't encourage me.
Yeah, exactly. No, not very hopeful. Yeah, we need to deconstruct our faith in humans a little more often, probably.
Yeah,
exactly.
If you know people.
So anyway, those
are
my observations in terms of reasons that people would leave.
Yes.
Those three. No spiritual life, genuine spiritual life in the home, no consistent spiritual life, emotional wounds that sometimes come from the home or from other Christians, and then no real clear understanding of what Christianity and the Christian worldview represents, and so they're rejecting, a false understanding of what Christianity is, which they ought to. We all ought to.
Yes,
at
exactly.
that point.
Okay, so I want to get you next step here. Your tactics. We know that a lot of the people who listen to our podcast are parents and grandparents who are talking to their kids or young people talking to their friends. And one of your kind of areas of expertise are these tactics, these skills of how to do this well. And I'd love to get, especially, so I've got to check with Colson. Colson, do you know who Columbo was, the detective?
I do. I know who he is.
Okay.
He was.
Okay. So
you passed Colson.
Greg, you
the
had
first
me because I grew up with my parents, my mom especially, was into all the detectives, the mysteries, the I've read all the Nero Wolfe books out loud to my wife. If you're not familiar with Nero Wolfe, I've just set you up for a few years of reading the Rex Stout books. They're brilliant. And Columbo was always one of my favorites for exactly some of the stuff you're describing. So what is it about that that's effective? And then how do you coach just some real simple coaching to our listeners for if they are interacting with someone who's deconstructing or seems to be, and then maybe we'll wrap up with a final word to anyone who is in the process of deconstructing.
Yeah, sure. Well, I had a motif down that I was using, and I was trying to find a handle to characterize it with, and I came up with Lieutenant Columbo, who is the number one most recognized TV icon of all time, as it turns out. Detective. Yeah, he has. He even beat Lucy. But when I tell audiences, they say, "Who's Lucy?" You know, kind of thing. So nobody knows that anymore, because TV isn't what it used to be. Now there's so many other options. But I like him, and even though people don't understand, I have a lot, especially young people. They don't know. I actually act out a little Lieutenant Columbo. I've got the trench coat and the cigar, and I do a little Columbo routine there. That's a lot of fun. I bring him up to speed. But the key here is that he's slow. He shows up at the crime scene. The murder's already been committed, and yep. you know who the murderer is. But he shows up at the crime scene, yep. and he's got to solve the problem. And he's kind of he looks. Nobody takes him seriously.
Right.
Okay. He is just bumbling around, scratching his head, muttering to himself, you know, I don't know, there's something yeah. about this thing that bothers me, you know, kind of thing. And do you mind if I ask you a question? Then he starts asking questions. But the part of the key here is the question asking, which is critical. And the yep. second thing is the manner in which he does it. And this is kind of under the radar, you know, scratching yes. his head, you know, you don't take him seriously. Yes. So this is actually very important, especially I think when parents are dealing with kids that are deconstructing, because you don't want to come across as the authority figures That's coming right. down on them. We talked about that already. But so Columbo has this manner. He just has this manner. And most of the time, he's simply collecting information. Yes. And in fact, for most of the whole episode, he's doing that. And That's it's right. not until the end when all of this information he's gathered allows him to come down and almost catch the murderer by surprise. Yep. This doofus, this, you know, yep. guy who doesn't look like Excuse he can me. Think his way out of a wet paper bag, bang, he gets him. And so there's a certain thing, way in which I think maneuvering like this as a Christian in conversations with non-Christians is really powerful, because we are coming in, as we ought to, I think, in a certain way, with gentleness and reverence, right?
Right.
The First Peter passage that talks about defending your faith, he says, but with gentleness and reverence.
Right.
Paul tells Timothy in 2 Timothy, the Lord's bondservant is not to be quarrelsome, but mm-hmm. patient when wrong. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we get these admonitions in the text and how to be careful not to put people on the defensive in an inappropriate way. And oftentimes apologists are very aggressive. Or if they're not apologists, they're just angry parents or grandparents, especially with their kids.
They're yeah. scared. Their kid is suddenly doing something that terrifies them, and they respond out of that fear. In the therapeutic world, Greg, this is called the one down approach. I don't know if you found that terminology.
I haven't heard that phrase. But
when I go, okay, help me understand something, Greg. You said you want your children to believe certain things, but then you're not living it out in this way over here. I'm curious how you think that plays out for them.
Yeah, so that's great.
That's called the one down. To ask it that way is the one down perspective.
Yeah,
it makes
sure.
the other person responsible to come to a conclusion, even though the conclusion is as obvious as a giant
oh, yeah.
Easter egg in the middle of the yard. They have to be the one who sees it, claims it, grabs it, puts it in the basket.
Right. Yeah, that's great. And I presume that in that scenario you just described, you're first asking the question, about their own behavior. What are you doing or whatever? And then they end up acknowledging what they've done. I said, well, if you're doing this, why are you surprised that they're responding this way or whatever? But you're asking questions to get all this information on the table. And
right.
so if I were talking to Aaron Rodgers, for example, who made this statement to me, I would say, I'm a little confused, Aaron. Is it your understanding that people go to hell simply because they don't believe in God? Then he'd tell me, probably say yes, because that was, I said, where'd you get that from?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got it from the Bible. Where does it say that people go to hell because they don't believe in God? The demons believe mm-hmm. in God.
Right.
They're not going to heaven. So now but notice these are all questions.
Right.
Pertaining to what he said. So I'm going to, I think this, I already offered one, and that is, what happened? Well, I don't believe in God anymore. Well, what happened?
Yeah, that's a great one.
I don't believe in Christianity.
Tell
me about that. What
wow.
happened?
Yeah.
What is it? I'm really interested to understand what it is that took place. So this, in the tactical game plan, and there's really three steps to this, and they're all very simple. The first step is to just gather information, and you're using some form of the question, what do you mean by that? So,
right.
And that's what I was doing with, as I role played this thing with Aaron Rodgers, that's what I'd be doing with, I didn't do it so well when I was the one in the position. So, you know, full disclosure here, it's not always easy emotionally when all of a sudden you're hit with this and you think, right. Where did that come from?
Absolutely.
So I'm sympathetic to parents, but it's very important. Just a little sidelight on this point. You know, I know Sean McDowell very well. I've known him for many, many years. He's been in our home many times, and he's a very close friend. But he told me once about how when he was in high school, I think he began to question his own faith. And, of course, he's the son of Josh McDowell.
Right.
And he said, you know, my dad said, well, you know, son, I'm glad you're questioning because it shows you care about truth.
That's
and
exactly
I'm convinced.
Right.
Pardon me?
Yeah, that's the welcome. Yeah, good
yeah,
question.
Yeah, and he
that's
said,
yes.
I am convinced if you keep pursuing truth, you're going to be solidified in your Christian convictions.
Absolutely.
Now, that's from Josh. And then Josh told me the same story. I had him in the air once, and he talked about the whole thing. So, but he, even though I had not only from Sean, but I had from Josh this counsel when it became my turn, you know, I did not execute so well. So I'm very sympathetic to people who are having a hard
yes.
time here. But there's so much wisdom in that. Just relax.
Okay.
Every kid has got to go through this time where they're not borrowing their faith from their parents. They've got
right.
to make it their own.
Absolutely.
And sometimes that's fairly smooth, and other times it's really, really rocky. I think Jim Dobson had a problem with Ryan, you know, who is now a strong Christian.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Billy Graham did as well with Franklin, and yet.
Yeah. And
I think we all, yeah, there's some of that that we want to encourage. Okay, this is great. Let's wrap up on, Greg, I'd love to give you a chance to just a couple of sentences to those people. I know Colson's got another video shoot he needs to head to in a second. And this has been fantastic. I mean, I really feel like our audience out there is going to really appreciate. And so, one, I want to make sure we send them to you. We're going to, you know, link the ministry. We're going to connect to the books and stuff and even put down, you mentioned Jason Jimenez's book. We'll put some, I've got some of those ready. But also making sure that Tactics is on there, that we can get people to be looking there.
Right.
As someone who's faced it, you know, let's wrap up a couple of sentences with that population that might be listening that is wrestling with deconstruction. We know we've got people who do that, who check in.
Well,
what would you
forgive me for mentioning another book I wrote, but it does play into this answer.
Right,
I wrote a book called The Story of Reality. And it's a foundational understanding of the Christian worldview. It's a story of reality, how the world began, how it ends, and everything important that happens in between. So it looks at God, it looks at man, it looks at Jesus, it looks at the cross, and it looks at the final resurrection. So I only say that because there's a lot of Christian parents who don't have a balanced grasp of how the story works out. And when you see the whole thing from beginning to end, there's a certain elegance to it. And so many things that didn't make sense now. And that will help to convey that information to their kids. The other question I mentioned, what happened or what do you mean by that? There's the next step is to find out why they think that Christianity is not true. How did you come to that conclusion? You can use those in combination as you're calmly and properly inquisitively answering, finding out what's going on, and let them talk. I mean, that's one of the most important things that I can encourage parents to do is draw them out with curious questions about what happened. What is it you believe now? You know, and why do you reject just it, not accusatory, but as a curiosity.
Right.
And then at least you have some substance. What I found, fellas, is a lot of times when people are moving away, when they're asked those questions, they can't be that clear on it. And they have to, that forces them to think more carefully about it. That itself has a salutary effect. And then people aren't going to be, parents aren't going to be able to answer all the challenges, but you guys will help direct people, and I do in footnotes and stuff like that. Another book I have is Street Smarts, where I deal with a lot of the specific challenges, like the one we talked about, slavery, et cetera, and genocide. Yes. But using questions, always using questions. And so you can direct them. They don't have to be experts at apologetics. You can direct them to other works that people, I mean, you know that our bench is really deep on these questions. We've got the answers. So that's where I direct parents.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Greg, very, very much for this time. We're very honored that you would take the time to come and do that. And if we can ever partner with you in any way, you let us know. We are, we're super proud for this. I really do appreciate it. I know you've got a lot on your plate, and so you taking this time has been a real blessing. And
it's a pleasure for me, gentlemen, genuinely. And anytime you want to chat again, glad to do it. Have Tim or Lisa on board, or Jason for that matter.
When we reach out.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
hopefully that will improve our odds.
That's great. Yeah, I'm sure they will. You.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Reconstructed Faith. If you enjoyed what you heard or were challenged, please leave us a review. It'll help other people find us. If you have questions or a topic you'd like to hear discussed, shoot me an email at info@southspring.org. Reconstructed Faith is a resource of South Spring Baptist Church. Remember, don't give up, trust God, search for answers.